Now, I'm very, very pleased that you're willing to take the time on your, what I gather is a short visit to Madison, to talk to us. And I understand that you were an undergraduate here, that you're one of the first graduates in home economics from the University of Wisconsin. And there's a lot I'd like to ask you about that, but before that, would you tell me a little bit about where you were born and what determined you to go to the university at a time when perhaps not that many women were making this decision, and why you came to Madison in particular?
I was born in Indiana and lived there in Wabash until I graduated from high school. And then I went to Yankton College in South Dakota for a year because my cousin was dean of the college, and needing finances to go on, I taught 1 year in Niobrara, Nebraska. And in the meantime, my father had company had moved him to Madison, so the family decided to move to Madison, and so it seemed logical for me to transfer to the university. So I entered as a sophomore in 1910.
And could you tell me a little bit about why you decided on attending university?
Well, it is a matter of being able to live at home while I was a student, and of course I knew the reputation of the institution and felt that it was a real opportunity to attend the university.
Well, what I had in mind was not so much coming here as why you decided on a university education. This was not something girls did at that time.
My mother had been a teacher for 25 years, and the three of us had all gone to school to her, and she intended that we go to college from the earliest years, so it was nothing new in our family, so it was a matter that I had always had in mind.
That's does sound very natural under mm-hmm. those circumstances.
So when I entered, I was majoring in history, and then I learned more about home economics. Our family lived on Mill Street, just less than two blocks from Lathrop Hall, and that's where the department was located. And so I became interested, and they didn't allow us to elect home economics courses from liberal arts at that time, so I decided to transfer to the College of Agriculture and major in home economics. So Miss Marlotte had been here just 1 year previous and organized the department, so when I finished in 1913, that was her first four-year class, and 20 of us in the class, and good percentage of them have gone on or went on in professional work. She had a book of pictures of her grandchildren, as she called them.
Which you were one?
No, we were her children.
You were her children, I see.
But our class was always prominent in professional work, but not represented so well in the scrapbook of children. But she was a very wonderful teacher and demanded the best that we had to offer, and so we really felt that we gained a great deal from our training. We had a fine faculty. It was a small faculty. There were quite a number. I still correspond with Dr. Alice Loomis, who I had in Foods and Nutrition. She is, she got her doctorate at Yale, and she's almost 100 now, but she's still active in reading and writing. She sent me a reprint recently on senility, as which she's quite concerned. So then we had other faculty in clothing, textiles, and the artwork, and Miss Marlotte herself had a very famous course that at that time we called humanics, that applied the principles of physical and social sciences in much of what now is included in child and family development, but at that time was not included in most home economics curricula. but it was a very worthwhile course, so we enjoyed it. Lathrop Hall was quite a center of many activities when I was in school. Dean Lois K. Matthews, the Dean of Women, had her office there, and the student organizations, the Self-Government Association, and the YWCA. I was on the cabinet, and it had lounges where we could have all sorts of meetings. The YM and the YW would have Sunday Vespers in the large lounge. And Miss Mayhew, who was head of physical education, was the advisor for the YW, and we went to Lake Geneva in the summer for camp experiences there. The Marge Dobler, I think, was in about her first years of teaching and starting her work in the instruction on dance, and of course we enjoyed the bowling and swimming there in Lathrop Hall. So and then we had a cafeteria too, a small one, and I served as checker there whenever my classes permitted, helping a little in financing my education. And so then Lathrop Hall, we would have all university mixers, no date affairs, so you see, it was practically the union building for the campus. There was no union building at
now
that
time.
Now
that's much earlier than the
yes.
union.
Yes, and so living so near was really a wonderful opportunity. And it seemed like so many things were centered there that it was a privilege to be in that building. I joined the Alpha Gamma Delta sorority when I was first year, and so it made some close friendships and campus-wide friendships, so I had contact with other departments. Of course, we were required to take a number of courses other places. I recall particularly my science work, and have heard so many discussions about size of classes. And it always reminded me of the large classes that I had enjoyed in chemistry and physics. I think there were 750 in Dr. Hollenberg's freshman chemistry class. Of course, we divided into our quiz sections and laboratory sections for detailed work, but it was the policy of the university then for the heads of the departments to teach the beginning courses. And so I've always been very grateful for that.
Now, was this in the chemistry would have been building. In letters and science, wouldn't it?
Oh,
not?
Yes. It was but the same for everybody.
I see. But as a major in the College of Agriculture, there was no problem about taking
courses
in letters and
everything
science.
We took there. Our more advanced chemistry and some of the physiological and food chemistry we had over in ag chemistry, but all the beginning courses were in the same for everybody. I took my physiology and bacteriology along with the medical students, and then we had physics. I think that is about the most unique opportunity. Benny Snow, I don't suppose you ever heard of him, but he was...
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
He was a very marvelous teacher, and we were told not to study the text until after the work was presented in his lectures and demonstrations. And our lecture was at 11 o'clock in the morning, and he would come there at 7 in the morning, usually, to prepare for it. And he had a huge demonstration table, and all these things were set up, and he would perform. His famous lecture on snowflakes was most colorful, and I've seen him come in, and by the end of his lecture, his white collar would be wilted entirely. But he was just so enthusiastic that it was contagious. We really... I think we're inspired and enjoyed that work that some people found rather difficult and uninteresting. But We certainly enjoyed physics, so that I think was a very good policy that they had at that time.
Now, did many, was this something that a lot of students took? And
well, there were 500 in our freshman section. Of course, the engineers, I think, took it, the physics, at the same time. You see, they gave the fundamentals in their first course.
I was thinking particularly about women. How many girls took this?
I don't recall. Of course, all the home economics students were required to take it. And I didn't think we were conspicuous particularly, but of course there are a majority of men in the university then, certainly probably, I don't know if there are larger proportions than now or not. I hadn't really thought about that. I guess there probably were more men, many in proportion.
Oh, there were definitely more men
than there are now.
Students, many more men students than women students at that time.
Well, there are now, too.
And, but the proportions, I think, have changed. I'm not sure just how greatly.
Well, home economics in the beginning was almost 100% a woman's field, and so it offered opportunity for leadership that many other fields didn't. So that my mother always said we knew the home economists from coast to coast, and I think maybe that was true. And in my later professional work, now there are many more men in home economics. I think that's fine because more emphasis being placed on child and family development, human relations, and less probably on some of the techniques, certainly families are made up of men as well as women, so I think the dual point of view is very good.
Well, I think probably you would find a little argument about this, although I was somewhat surprised to find out just how much a field this has become for men. And how much in demand that they were graduates, men graduates, finding, for instance, that the job problem does not exist for them in this area to the extent that it does in many other fields.
They may have a little tendency to want to take over. I don't know. particularly in the, we are, and field of applied science and art, and so of course we do depend on basic fields, as the physical sciences were emphasized more at the beginning. The social sciences were not well developed when I was in school. I mean sociology, and of course economics was well started, but not anything like it is at the present time. So that there has been greater emphasis on the social sciences. So in certain places, depending on what phase of home economics person wants to go on in, whether they need more background in the physical sciences or the social sciences. Of course, in child and family development, it's sociology and psychology are very important, of course. Economics throughout, I guess. We feel that at the present time, emphasis on the consumer. As I've said, I think that home economics has contributed to the opportunity women have had for dual roles because they figured certainly in the development of our frozen and preserved foods of all kinds, and all the mixes and ready-prepared things that have had a great part in developing those, so that I think that's made a real contribution there. Of course, as far as going back to the students' days, we certainly had strong student spirit. I think football was one of the major interests, and we always had preceding a football games, the rallies and bonfires down on lower campus. I don't suppose they are allowed to do that anymore, are they?
No.
On Saturday, Friday night.
That no bonfires.
Our, what?
No more bonfires.
And I don't think you have probably space for that even. You have so many new buildings that most of the open spaces are taken up, although the campus is still beautiful, I think. And I haven't been along the Lakeshore Drive yet, but that used to be a very favorite place of ours.
Well, I think you'll find it still quite lovely.
Mm-hmm. Do they still have use the skyrocket in classes?
I've heard it talked about, but I don't believe they do.
That was a very distinctive thing of our campus at that time. And the favorite professors always got their skyrocket to begin with. Carl Russell Fish and Dr. Sellery were history professors I had at the beginning, and we always opened those classes with the skyrocket. And I've seen outside lecturers come and almost pale under the long beginning hiss for the skyrocket. They wouldn't know what was coming until the thing was completed. But I think it's kind of too bad they've given that up, because I don't know of any other campus that ever had it.
Well, that's the trouble with traditions. They don't always continue.
No, that certainly is true, and each one has its place, I presume. I don't know what... I had some programs here. Farm and Home Week back in 1912 and 13, and found my name on the program for a contribution. I often wondered what a junior or senior would have to offer, and maybe we were pushed ahead and a little bit more than the students are now in some ways.
Well, Farm and Home Week has been an important event.
They still have it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I'm presuming it's largely the faculty that constitute the program, but of course...
Well, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. I think the students play quite a part. You don't recall what your contribution was?
Well, I have those programs upstairs, but I didn't happen to bring them down here. You don't have a dean of women now, do you, on the campus?
No, this situation is a little different. Mm-hmm. Who was Dean of Women when you were here?
And Dr. Lois Kimball Matthews, and she was a very, very remarkable woman. And we profited a great deal, I think, by her acquaintance and guidance. She wrote a history of the American Association of University Women, I think with one other woman, and... she did a great deal to help the women students in a variety of ways, and so it's hard for me to think of a campus without someone for students to go to, but of course you have guidance officers that
well,
serve.
We do have a dean of students.
Yes, and but the guidance functions are more academic than personal, I presume.
Well, it depends on which center you go to. They do make a considerable effort to help students with personal problems.
Mm-hmm. The Miss Zuhl, who succeeded Miss Marlott, was a personal friend of mine, and we shared an apartment when we were taking graduate work. So,
oh, did you? You knew her very well then.
Yes, and so it's been a privilege to. Opportunity for me to keep up with developments here. I had the pleasure of going down to see her at the retirement home on Tuesday, and her mind is as clear as a bell, and she is, of course, still very much interested in everything that goes on, but she's having some health problems. Don't think of course, I went, as I said, I taught in the local high school, Dr. Thomas Lloyd-Jones was principal of the high school. He'd been with Dr. Harvey when he started Stout Institute, and he had had Stout graduates for his teachers for the most part. And he wasn't quite sure what Miss Marlotte's graduates with all the emphasis on science and other work could do in high school teaching. So I was sort of a guinea pig for him to observe what could be done, I guess. And
was this the first time this the home economics was taught in high school?
Oh, no, they'd had, but they'd had old teachers from Stout.
Oh, I see.
And he visited us often, and I thoroughly enjoyed working with him. And then...
Well, this was at Central High, did
yes,
you say?
Yes. And I was there just 2 years. And then went to Platteville, the normal, and I was interested in driving through there last Thursday and stopped. And the developments down there are really quite striking. Everything that in the institution was in one large building down there when I was there, and of course they've got quite a campus there now with all kinds of developments. So things do change, and for the better, I'm sure, because it's Wisconsin is certainly well supplied with educational institutions. Seems that way even coming from California. Of course, California has so many of the...
it has a very large system, doesn't it?
Yes, 9 different campuses for the university as such, and then I don't know how many state colleges, and some of those have been changed to universities, but they're junior colleges are really the remarkable thing there. I think they have over 90. And so, of course, that they take care of practically all the vocational education work. When they started, they took it all out of the high schools, and which I thought the cinch was maybe not wise, because some people don't want to go on even through 18 to... with liberal arts if they don't want it. So
that's true.
Mm-hmm. But Wisconsin has always stood out on a very fine vocational education program. We had the dual system when I was here. I don't know whether they still have or not.
What do you mean by the dual
system?
Well,
a state supervision of vocational schools is separate from the general, and they divided Central and made it into a vocational high school, and then the general, after I left, and of course the big Milwaukee trade school has been one of the outstanding ones in the country, I think.
Well, I think the vocational school, as it used to be, is now the Madison Area Technical College.
But, yes, well, that's the same thing.
It's the same thing. It's mm-hmm. just changed its name mm-hmm. a bit.
Yes.
And
well.
Grown considerably.
Mm-hmm. But that's... probably at a little higher level too. I mean, is it high school, or would it correspond to the high school?
Well, in some areas I think, but it's also possible for people to take some courses there for college credit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in California they either go in for vocational training or first 2 years of university, or just as a terminal course for general education, and which if they take certain requirements they get an AA degree. But the university tried to push more of the first 2 years down into these schools, but we feel that the technical vocational work is their distinctive contribution, because everybody can't go to the university, or shouldn't go, I don't think so.
Well, of course, there's a problem here now, because just this last year, there's been a limit placed on the growth in enrollment, which means that, I guess, for the first time, qualified students are not able to go to the University of Wisconsin, at least not to this campus. And
how has that affected the non-resident student? Has that curtailed?
Well, it's curtailed in all areas, but mm-hmm. it even includes Wisconsin students.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been considerable discussion of this, and it's not a development that people are terribly happy about, I guess.
Well, you're referring particularly to the Madison campus, I presume.
Well, this is the one I know the most about, but I understand that limits are not only imposed here.
I see.
Milwaukee also is having this problem. And
but the other campuses are still fairly open, I presume.
More so, but I think there has been a real problem that's developed. Mm-hmm. And, the suggestion has been made, and I think this is probably likely, that a number of students, more than would, will go to the vocational school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel that I've had a very interesting professional life. Of course, at Montana State, we it's a new state in a way, and yet had a fine institution there, and we developed closely with the extension and research. Of course, it's a delightful place to live too, and so I hated very much to leave there after 25 years, but I did go to Ohio State largely because of the opportunity of developing a program for the PhD degree in home economics prior to our starting our own program. There had been 26 that had gotten their degrees in education at Ohio State there, and in some of the basic sciences, but it had all the necessary facilities there, and I think now they have quite a fine program, so that we and there were a limited number of opportunities because it is an applied field, and so of course you dependent on a combination of work both in some special basic field and carrying on either in the food and nutrition and from your chemistry and other areas, and then this new family and child development phase in the social sciences and the textiles and clothing. Of course, the textiles are certainly a high specialization in chemistry, and the clothing more in the art, but also the psychological aspects too, quite a bit, because why do we need the clothing, and what creates a great interest and value of it. So it's a field that touches on so many different aspects, just as life itself does. So
I think we have a tendency not to realize just how broad a field it really is.
It's now, of course, tending to break up into more specializations than was probably true before. Of course, the further you accumulate in subject matter and in each phase, well, of course, that's true in medicine or any other field, that greater and greater specialization, which has some value.
Do you think this is good?
Well, in general, but I still am strong for a basic core in home economics, because it seems to me that it is a composite vocation, and you just need to have management ability in not only finances, but time and personnel and basic knowledge of nutrition and clothing and all phases to carry on successful homemaking. And it seems to me that, of course, maybe students come with more of that from their secondary education or acquired in some other phases, but that's, I think we need, as I say, a common core for the best results, but that it's it's a time of change in every phase of work. And so, of course, the people that are in charge now are the ones to make those decisions. So my point of view may not be quite the same.
Well, it's hard to project what's going to, mm-hmm. to develop. Mm-hmm. When you were here, there were several things you mentioned that interested me. You said that there was a lot of campus spirit. Of course, we're familiar with the issues that have been alive here in the last decade. Mm-hmm. What were the major things going on when you were a student? Of course, we're familiar with the issues that have been alive here in the last decade. Mm-hmm. What were the major things going on when you were a student?
Well, athletics, of course, were the common denominator, I suppose, for university spirit. You naturally, everyone was interested in that. And as I said, we didn't have the Union Building, but we did have all campus social events, I presume, more than true at the present time. I don't know what they do for the unaffiliated students in the way of trying to provide some social life as well as but I presume the Union helps a great deal in that regard. Certainly there were people with enough individual ideas on the campus, but there certainly was not the rebellious spirit or the feeling that they had to go all out like they developed in the 60s, I guess. Wouldn't you say that was the decade of the most radical student activities?
I think one would have to. Was there a lot of, it probably wasn't as much, but what was the political sense on
well,
the campus?
Well, I had...
Was there a lot of interest in this
you
area?
You mean the government?
Interest in political developments.
Campus politics.
Well, both campus and nationwide.
Well, I think probably there was plenty of interest in campus politics. I believe a little less in outside politics. At least that maybe others would differ with me, but that, as I look back, it seems to be that was less prominent. But of course, the political science people probably would feel differently about it. And the women were not taking quite as active a part, although. We did get women's suffrage not long after that, too.
Were you interested in any of that?
Oh, of course. I think we were interested in that. I was out of school at that time, but we were interested in it and had high hopes that women would become more active in politics. And I don't know what the explanation is. I think sometimes they're a little thin-skinned. They're afraid of the... criticism that, and the hard things that they have to go through. But I think women and men should work together. I think they each have their own contribution to make, and that we'd be better off if we had a better balance of men and women active in governmental affairs.
Getting back to athletics, I was wondering what kind of athletic program there was for women when you were here.
Well, we did not have any outside competition. There was quite a bit among the sororities. They had bowling teams and there were independent groups too that were organized. And of course, swimming was part of an activity. They played hockey and other games that was a competitive type too, and basketball was quite a sport at that time, but not much in intercollegiate. Transportation was not so easy then as it is now, and they weren't as well developed. I don't recall basketball being as prominent even then. When I went to Montana, of course, basketball was a major sport because of the climate. The football season was so very short. Basketball season actually indoor was much longer. So that's where I remember basketball most.
I see.
You didn't have the swimming or the tennis facilities that you have indoors now, which is wonderful.
Yeah, well, that's true. Those mm-hmm. those are both fairly recent. And
skiing was, the students were interested in that. And tobogganing we had down over the hill to the lake. Do they still do that?
No, they don't. I think the skiers go off to other places.
The crews were interested in that, and of course we.
Well, the crews took us on.
We canoed considerably there. I remember one Memorial Day taking two couples. We went down through the four lakes, and I don't know whether the students enjoy canoeing much now or not.
Well, I don't know how it would compare.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was sort of a major interest, I would say, because it was, of course, the old armory was our major auditorium. In fact, about the only one we had, and all public lectures and things. Of course, they did use the stock pavilion some, too. It was there at that time. You're still using that.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And in fact, the university doesn't use the old armory for this purpose.
It does not.
Mm-hmm. It's primarily, the pool is still there and it's mm-hmm. used. And on the second floor, the basketball goes on. Basketball practice is a daily thing year-round.
Big assembly. Of course, you do have the Union Building Auditorium or Theater, but that isn't for very large groups. I mean,
no, there is really no terribly large place. Mm-hmm. I think the Stock Pavilion is still the biggest.
Well, Wisconsin has always had pretty active state politics, I think, and possibly there was interest in more in state politics than there was in national. Though the Follets were active at, I don't know just what time, but people, I just don't know their years exactly, but they certainly were prominent while I was around.
Now, during the years that you were away in Montana and Ohio and so forth, as an alumnus, how closely did you keep in touch with what was going on in Madison?
Well, as I said, I was back at least once a year and sometimes oftener visiting my family. And so, of course, that brought me back. And I've been a life member of the Alumni Association from the very beginning, so always get the magazine, and that is a very good way of keeping in touch, I think. So that, their local clubs. We have a group in San Diego now of the Wisconsin alumni.
So it's a very inactive group?
Well, they meet usually about twice a year, and especially if there's somebody coming. The president was down there not so long ago. And
President Weaver?
Yes, and then, of course, the crew was down there this spring, and it wasn't as pleasant a day as it might have been, so, and I had other things I had hoped to get there, but I didn't get down, so, but I saw, read about it anyhow.
Does this group, is it active in any way in the scholarship program?
Well, I think not as a group. I think probably more as individuals. If we all contribute through the Alumni Foundation, that's the...
But as a group, you don't actively raise money for...
No, I think not.
For scholarships.
I imagine that's more in the state association, state locals, wouldn't you think?
I just don't know what it mm-hmm. occurred to me mm-hmm. to wonder.
Because those from away, I think, only meet once or twice a year, just for acquaintanceship thing. So.
We mentioned a few minutes ago the... We referred a few minutes ago to the protest period here.
The what?
The period, you know, in the 60s when the campus protests were...
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what reaction there was in the alumni group that to these events.
Well, of course we're not too happy about it. But it was happening on most campuses, but I think maybe... A little. I don't think any more openly here than at Berkeley, anyhow. So we couldn't. But just isn't constructive. It didn't seem to me. It just seemed to me all so destructive. They were against things, but there was very little that I could see they were for that could work.
Did you notice a lot of criticism of the handling of this?
Well, I don't know. I just think that it was so new that very few knew how to handle it. And what would work on one campus wouldn't necessarily work on another. You had some very strong... student leadership, I think, here that had a probably more than the usual amount of freedom, so that maybe they went just a little farther. I heard that some were too pleased over the recent interest in helping the students that caused that bombing.
Oh, are you speaking of David Fine?
Yes.
Yes, there was the cardinal, I think, came out with a
yes.
proposal to
finance his, and that seemed a little far fetched to me, at any rate. But he'd had considerable time to either take care of it himself or else. Face it, I don't even know where he was found.
I haven't been following it that closely, but.
The thing isn't finished yet, though, I guess.
Oh, no, no. He hasn't come to trial yet.
No.
Although I think he will soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that there seems to be a swing back on most campuses to a little more normal attitude, even toward in living situations. The dormitories are getting quite popular all over, I think. They're crowded down at Ohio State, I know. I guess they're full here, I think.
They are now, yes. There was a time when they
deserted almost.
There was a move to living off campus.
Yes, in small apartments and so forth. I guess they got a little tired of that.
Well, it still goes on, but of course the growth of the university has had an effect.
Well, I think many are seeing the advantages in the dormitories too.
Now, did you live at home while you were...
While I was here.
While you were at
the university. Yes. Mm-hmm. But quite close to the campus, so...
When you did say that your sorority activities...
Yes, and there are small groups and had more or some responsibility that way, so that I contacted the student life.
You also mentioned your being on the YWCA cabinet.
Yes.
Was this... well, it's hard for you to know, maybe... do you feel that this was more active as a campus group?
I'm sure
then
it was, definitely. It was a very active force, both the YM and the YW. Do they still have that YM building over there on the campus? I guess not. I think that probably
was
taken.
What one you're thinking of?
Well, there was a great big one. I think where the center is now.
Where the Wisconsin Center is?
Yes.
Yes. No, that's no longer there. There's another building.
I see. Where is it? Down
that's off of University Avenue.
Oh, I see. And it probably doesn't function at all like the old Y did. It was, well, in some ways, I suppose, for the men, somewhat of a union center, and of course, some students lived there too.
So oh, did they?
It was several stories high, I don't know, four or five, something of that sort. So it was right along there by the armory, I think. They're very near.
Yes, I think it was either where the Wisconsin Center building is, probably that one. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. alumni building is behind that on the lake shore.
The fraternities did quite a lot in housing, and of course there was a very definite swing away from them, and that's changing somewhat, I understand, too. I mean, there's more interest in membership.
After World War II, I think there was a big shift away from the sororities and fraternities, too.
And then also the administration trying to dictate their policies, enough that many went off the campus because of that.
As a sorority member, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's those groups, to my mind, are personal and more or less take the place of family. And I still think people have the right to choose their own friends. And I think that I believe that the institution should be open to everybody. There isn't any question about that. But I think that groups of that sort have been very helpful to many people. They not all need it or all want it. But I think that's a matter of individual choice, just like churches or anything else. And there are certainly groups for all groups, too. I mean, Jewish people and colored and all. So that I don't think that they have to be mixed 100%. But that's my personal feeling. But other people may feel differently about it. I don't think the institutions are taking any hand in that anymore, are they?
It certainly isn't a big issue
today. Certain things, always there's a rise and fall in that sort of thing, definitely. And I think we're going to solve all the problems of the world, and it just can't all be done at once. I talked to a man that was over in Iran, and their drive to change, jump over centuries, and the problems that they face. Many things take time, and people are a little impatient about that. They want to change it tomorrow and have it all different.
It's sometimes hard to wait, I guess.
And we need the spirit of youth to make progress. There isn't any question about that. I think you have to experiment some to prove that what is best. And maybe some of the experiments aren't enduring, and they find what is the more important.
So, you mentioned teaching at Central High School. Did you have any connection at all with Wisconsin High School? Wisconsin
High. No, I did not. Mm-hmm.
Ruth Anderson.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know mm-hmm. she did, and yes. That's why I wondered if
we didn't even for our student teaching. We taught we taught each other. And that was
how do you mean?
Well, we'd pretend to be a student class. Miss Marlotte was even a member, a high school student,
and she really.
She could. She was our teacher, but she could do the most awful things if we hadn't told her right, you know, and given right instructions. But she would do all the wrong things so that we'd realize what we hadn't done.
Well, that's a good way to learn, I guess.
Well, it was sort of different than we have now, anyhow. So I think the real situations are much better, but of course, those of all been teacher training has been greatly improved, I think. And experience in all fields are becoming an important part of professional education, I think.
Did you take education courses? Were these required at that time?
Yes, I had taken a normal, some normal courses in Yankton because, of course, that was unusual for freshmen, but at that time that was possible. And then I took some education courses, of course, because I got the teaching certificates and I forget what the requirements were, but I met whatever they were at that time. So, and then I took the civil service exam for the state supervision, and I stood first, but they said I couldn't have it because I was too young. So
is that here?
Yes.
In Wisconsin?
Uh-huh.
My goodness.
I was just glad I didn't, so it worked out all right.
Now, I gather you did your advanced degree work at Columbia.
Yes.
Now, Wisconsin didn't have a PhD program at that time.
Oh, no.
That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know just when they did start. I read it recently, too, but I forget just when. But,
Miss Henderson went to Columbia, too, did she?
Who?
Ruth Henderson.
I'm not sure.
That seems to be my memory, but...
Well, it was a very... University of Chicago and Columbia were places that we... most people at my time went for their doctor's degrees.
These were the centers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, some of the others came along a little later.
What took you to Montana? That's a long way from Columbia.
Well, my supervising teacher here in Central High School had gone to Montana, Lucille Reynolds, who died just recently here at Attic Angel. And she was out in Montana and was going back to Minnesota to study, so she had recommended me when I would finish my master's to go out there. And so that's, and it appealed to me. I've always been interested, was interested in the West. So it, you have lots of opportunities in new places of that sort to take leadership, and I helped organize the. Did organize the Home Economics and the AUW and the Dietetics Association, all sorts of things that were, the time was right to start there, you see, and so it's, as I say, I think sometimes in smaller places you have opportunities that you wouldn't have in bigger places if you're interested. I was always interested in buildings, and we were able to build. The dormitories were all under our super jurisdiction out there, and we built new dormitories, and we had a rather unique place. What they called a quadrangle, they were offering money under the WPA, you know, for schools to build things and urging them to do it. Well. They'd furnish, I forget, 60% or something. The state had to furnish the rest. And there wasn't money for matching for needed school buildings, but so it seemed to turn toward dormitories. And they had sororities there, and so they felt they, if they built women's dormitories, they didn't need men because men were in the service, you see. And so we had what we called a quadrangle, six units that were suitable for sorority use, and they could lease them, or they could be used as independent dormitories. And so that was an interesting thing. And I was on the board for planning our union building out there, and also the one at Ohio State. So I had, Ohio State now has a second union building. The campus is spread, so you think they need it. So I suppose it, a thing might be true here, but they
well, we have what's called Union South.
Do you?
Uh-huh. Which is on the other side of University Avenue. Yes.
Oh, this is, uh-huh. Is that under separate management? or is it tied in with the...
Oh, it's all considered the union. It's, it's a different section of the campus, but...
it does have food service, I presume. And
oh, yes. It lounges, it's an activity center. Now, who was president when you were here? Was it Van Hise?
Yes. And I think he retired relatively soon after that. And then Dr. Burge, I think, was the next one, wasn't he?
That's right, yes. Well, Burge was even acting president part of the time when Van Hise was
he was very much of a scientist, too. Dr. Burge, they were very able men, and of course I knew President Fred through my sister and brother-in-law, because when he was regent, and he they neither one very well, I guess, Mr. and Mrs. Fred.
Well, I guess not. Dr. Fred is having some problems with his eyes and his and his hearing.
So do I, but I wear these and they work pretty good.
Well, I don't know whether he's satisfied with his or not.
Takes about a year to get used to them, at least I had to.
He's still very energetic and goes to his Van Nuys office every day.
Is he still working on the history, or has he, has that been
finalized? Well, he's been involved
what?
In the history of the College of Agriculture.
Oh,
well, he's not writing it himself, but he is encouraging members of the college who've been here a long time to work on it. I don't know just what phase it's reached at this point.
But he was interested in it.
And he's done a study of Wharf.
Oh, yes.
That he finished just recently.
Well, that's fine. Dr. Albion's tenure was short. Too short, I thought.
Yes, that was too bad.
Yes, it was. And I hope to see that art center tomorrow. It's,
the Albion Art Center, yes. That's where we're going to.
About it, and I just haven't had the opportunity to
I think you would enjoy it.
And, I'm looking forward.
Of course, that was a great thing that Dr. Fred worked for a long time to get on the campus.
Well, I just don't believe I've got any more for you.
I really wanted to ask you how you felt as a professional woman at a time when the professions were more or less a man's world. Did you feel that, I mean, home economics clearly was a woman's area, but did you feel that in terms of pay, recognition, professional advancement?
Well, of course, that was and still is one of the advantages of home economics, because it is... still primarily a woman's field, and certainly the women can go to the top. Of course, pay-wise, I think there's definitely been discrimination, and as would be true in almost any field. And I think that definitely is improving. I certainly was heard them give a pay schedule down at Ohio State, and it certainly made a tremendous impression on me compared to what we'd have. I think my top salary was $10,000 for as dean of home economics, and so of course they public school teachers start out almost at that now in some places. So. But, of course, living and everything else is so much more expensive, so it's very difficult to make fair comparisons, it seems to me. But women, many women just don't want to go on indefinitely in their professions, but I think it ought to be a matter of choice. I think the ones that... want to, I think, should have the opportunity. And I don't think that we should look down on women that want to be homemakers 100% either, because I think that can be a challenging, worthwhile life, too.
What do you think about this current trend of women trying to do both? More and more seem to be combining homemaking with professional work.
Well, I think it can be done, certainly with our smaller families and with our
greater facilities for simplifying the homemaking problems. But and of men assuming more responsibility too in helping, I think that goes along with it. But certainly we're all living longer, and I think that our life cycle takes different stages, and what seems to be all encompassing and all satisfying at one time isn't a little later. And so I think they should get their basic education before they're married, so that then if they...